And now we're joined by Dr. Ranjit Kudali. He's the USD chemistry professor and dean of the USD Graduate School. He's here once a month to talk about the latest in research around the country. And Dr. K, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Kara. It's a great pleasure to be back.
You know, we just heard that little story about the new science wing. So just take a minute and talk a little bit about the importance of science education in the high school and what that means, you know, traveling into the college level.
Well, absolutely. I think we always talk about STEM disciplines, that's the acronym, science, technology, engineering, and medicine. And there are other countries like China and India investing a huge amount of resources into STEM disciplines, and we seem to have lost the competitive edge. And so as educators, we are deeply concerned by the decline in the amount of funding at even the higher secondary level, because if students are not attracted to science, perhaps they will not pursue these disciplines during mm-hmm. their undergraduate programs, let alone go on to become engineers and doctors. So investing in science starts actually at the middle and at the higher secondary school, and the efforts in Rapid City are actually a good sign to encourage particularly women, underrepresented minorities in the disciplines of science.
Well, you're here today to talk about engineered microbes making silver nanoparticles. Tell me what this is.
All right. So actually, engineering microorganisms like bacteria is nothing actually new because, for example, the way we produce insulin is actually through genetically modified bacteria. So this is has been done since the late 1970s using small microorganisms like bacteria because we can easily manipulate their genes and their DNA, and we can get some important drugs like insulin. For example, researchers in California have also been able to make an anti-malarial drug, artemisinin, by modifying microbes. And so this work is actually in press in an American Chemical Society journal called Synthetic Biology. And what researchers at Harvard University did is they used a natural protein compartment. So the technical term for this protein compartment is encapsulin. So these encapsulin nanocompartments are protein cages were essentially used as a nanofactory. So these encapsulins, they have a definite size and shape. And the researchers at the Harvard Medical School were able to manipulate the DNA and convert that into what is called an engineered microbe. So specifically in this case, it was called an engineered encapsulin. So what they did was these new engineered bacteria were able to sequester or collect a lot of silver ions within their nano compartment or protein compartment.
And then what is that used for?
Well, so it turns out that, for example, for bacteria, they usually they store iron, for example. So they don't store silver, and iron is a very important and vital micronutrient that mammals and bacteria require. So, for example, for bacteria to survive, they must get iron from their environment. So microbes which are present in soils require iron, especially these bacteria, to survive, but it so happens that iron could be scarce in many environments. Depending on the pH, the soil conditions and environment, certain bacteria cannot survive in certain environments, yet they require iron. So what they do very ingeniously is that these bacteria, they stash this very essential nutrient iron within this nano compartment that I talked about called encapsulin. So if they're not able to get iron from the surroundings, from the environment, they could use the stash of iron that they have stored within this encapsulum. So microbes have this ability to store iron within this nano compartments or protein cages called encapsulants. However, they cannot store some important nanoparticles or elements like silver. And it turns out that silver nanoparticles have become quite common for a variety of applications. So silver nanoparticles are actually used as an antimicrobial agent. They are now coated in bandages, in clothing material, and other products at industrial scales, actually. And so the purpose behind this project was to transform these microbes that would normally stash iron, and they had to engineer that the DNA in these microbes so that they can now sequester or store silver ions.
But that this is new, being able to store the silver. That wasn't something that was able to happen sooner.
Before,
right?
Yes,
before.
Absolutely. So the use of silver nanoparticles for antimicrobial activity is well known for about 10, 20 years. However, if we want to produce silver nanoparticles, we have to do it by chemical methods that are that have reached what we can call a scalable industrial scale. However, the challenge in producing these silver nanoparticles at such a large scale lies in the inability to control their sizes. It so happens that many of these nanoparticles, like silver, for example, and also oxide nanoparticles, they can prevent the growth of bacteria or even destroy bacteria. And so silver is one common nanoparticle that has been tested. But the challenge has been to control their sizes in a very facile or easy manner. And when you're trying to scale these up, what invariably happens is we lose control of the size of the silver nanoparticles. It turns out that the size and the shape of the nanoparticles also have a profound effect on the antibacterial activity. So what researchers at Harvard did in the study was they realized that they could use these encapsulants, which have a predetermined size and shape. They are normally spherical in shape, and they are about 10 to 30 nanometers in size. So once they were able to remove the genes that originally would help them in storing iron, and instead now they could store silver, they were able to, these encapsulants were able to absorb silver, and the microbes had silver ions within this nano compartment that had a very distinct, discrete, and unique shape.
And then now they can then mass produce?
Now, so the hope is that since microbes are used for producing drugs like insulin, anti-malarial drugs, the hope is that these technology, this biotechnology, will be scalable. So essentially what they have to do is instead of growing these bacterial cells in the lab in milliliter scale, they will need to scale it up to liters and to greater amounts. And I think that is extremely promising, because to culture cells in large volumes is usually not a challenge.
And then what do you think is the next
This opens up a lot of interesting research areas, actually. So it could potentially lead to the use of these engineered microbes to make other nanoparticles. So silver is a metallic nanoparticle. It could potentially lead to making other nanoparticles like gold. Gold nanoparticles have also a lot of uses. Actually, iron nanoparticles also have a lot of uses in environmental remediation. So it opens up the field for a host of new varieties of synthesis of nanoparticles, metallic in nature, but it also could potentially lead to the development of the synthesis of metal oxide nanoparticles via the same route. So these nanotechnology is a multi-billion dollar industry now. And the challenge that I did not mention previously, for example, in making silver nanoparticles by the traditional route is that one has to use surfactants to prevent one nanoparticle in combining with another. So usually these surfactants, they are very expensive, and these surfactants are also environmentally very toxic. So using these engineered microbes to make nanoparticles in itself has a lot of value, but the fact that these nanoparticles synthesized through these engineered microbes exhibit very unique and high activities for antibacterial activities suggests that there is a value-added proposition in making these nanoparticles via this engineering of microbes.
Well, Dr. Kudali, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Innovation Today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kara. It is always a pleasure to be on SDPB.
Thank you.